When wishes were horses and beggars could ride, in a stone castle by the sea there lived a rich laird.
What am I supposed to choose? There are so many.
And so he left the trail, and he followed the sound of the music.
I am the goat from the hills and the mountains. And when I have finished eating these herbs and these vegetables, then I shall eat you, too.
Once upon a time, and welcome to the Story Story Podcast. I'm your host, Rachel Ann Harding, and I have some stories for you. This is a podcast to hear traditional stories told by some of the best storytellers in the world. It will take you to long ago and far away, and will bring you back safely. Pebbles are starting to appear on my pillow at night. They click together when I wake up, and three or four of them tumble down onto the floor with a clatter. Some are black, some white, some gray, even green. I thought maybe I had put something there, but I don't tend to pick up rocks anymore. I haven't since I was a child. So I stayed awake. I shooed away the Sandman when they came, see episode 34, The Sweetest Sound, to learn about them, and I waited. In the darkness, I waited. And then I heard a snuffling, shuffling, squeaking sound. In one swift motion, I clicked on the light, and there in my bed was the most adorable, tiny, pink heffalump, with his trunk wrapped around a little black stone. The stories for this episode are all about the transformations that change us on the inner and the outer. Storyteller Laura Packer is a storyteller, writer, teacher, and all-around wise woman who wrote what you are about to hear. This story was recorded in March at the Tejas Storytelling Festival that happens in Denton, Texas every year, and is a delightful event all around. This is Laura telling Ugly and the Donkey.
Thank you. Now, once upon a time, there was a farmer. And because this is a fairy tale, he was a poor man, but a good one. He lived out at the edge of the town with his daughter, and he did his best to get by, but really, this isn't a story about him. It's a story about her. Now, every morning on her birthday, every year on her birthday, her father would come in and he would wake her up and he would say, "Happy birthday, sweetheart. You are smart. You are funny. You are kind. You are so good at solving problems. I love you so much. I am so proud that you're my daughter." And every year on her birthday, the girl would be grateful for her father telling her she was smart and funny and kind and good at solving problems. But more than anything else, she yearned for him to say that she was beautiful. He never did. And he never did because, truthfully, she was not beautiful. At best, she was plain. All right, I'll be honest. She was homely. And so more than anything else, she yearned to be told that she was beautiful, and it never came. So it was on the morning of her 18th birthday, her father came in and he woke her up. He said, "Happy birthday, sweetheart. You are smart, you are funny, you're kind, you're good at solving problems. I am so proud that you're my daughter. I love you so much." And she was grateful to hear these kind things from her father, and yet she felt that twinge. Then he lit up and said, "Come with me, I have a gift for you." "Father, a gift? We can't afford a gift." "Shush," she said, "just shush. Come with me, come with me." And so she followed him down the stairs, across the hall, out the door, across the yard, around the corner, into the barn. And there in the barn was a mule. The girl looked at the mule. The mule looked at her. "Thanks, but father, a mule? A mule is a great gift," he said. "I mean, think about it. You can ride the mule. You can carry things with the mule. You are so smart that I know you're not going to stay in this little town forever. I know you'll come up with something great to do with the mule." "All right, Dad. Thanks." Well, they had a lovely day. They talked and they laughed and they did their chores together and they lived their lives. That night, while she was lying in bed, staring at the same cracks in the ceiling she'd seen every day of her whole life, she began to think. Remember, I told you this girl was smart. She had been around the fairy tale block a few times. And so she thought to herself, "A mule? A mule? Of course, the mule is enchanted." So she got up, put on her robe, went downstairs, across the hall, out the door, across the yard, around the corner, into the barn. Then she looked at the mule, and the mule looked at her, and she, no one was there. Nothing happened. So she shrugged and went back upstairs and went back to bed. And the next morning, as she was eating breakfast, her father said to her, "Sweetheart, would you mind taking the wood that I've gathered into town and selling it?" Now, to tell you the truth, she hated going into town. She hated going into town because whenever she did, all the pretty girls, they'd look at her and they'd go, The boys, they would throw stones at her, and they'd say, "Ugly, ugly, ugly." She hated going into town, but as much as she hated going into town, she loved her father more. So she said, "Of course, Father, I'd be glad to." And then he said, "You can take the mule. You can tie the wood to the mule. You can ride the mule. See, I told you it was a great gift." "Fine," she said. Well, she went out to the barn. She tied the wood onto the mule, and then she hopped up onto the mule. Now, she didn't know it, but the mule was enchanted. As soon as she hopped up on that mule, she was no longer ugly. Now, she was beautiful. She rode the mule into town, and everyone just stared as she went by. The boys ran up to her with bouquets of flowers, begging her to take theirs. She thought everyone was making fun of her in a new way, so she ignored them all, rode the mule around the corner of the little shack where she and her father sold things. She hopped down off the mule again and became her own plain self. She spent the day selling the wood, and at the end of the day, she hopped back up onto the mule and rode out, and as she did, everyone stared. Well, she went home. She put the mule back in the barn. She and her father had dinner, and she went to bed. But what she did not know was this. Not long after she rode out of town, the prince came to visit. I realize this seems like a very big coincidence. This is a fairy tale. Things like that happen in fairy tales. And so the prince came to visit because he wanted to know how everyone was doing. He wanted to hear the gossip and the news, and all anyone was talking about was the beautiful woman who rode the mule. And of course, the handsome prince on his beautiful white horse, he was intrigued. He asked, and everyone said, "Well, we don't know who she is, but she rode off that way, you know, down where the farmer with the ugly daughter lives." So the next morning, the prince rode his beautiful white horse down that road. He came to the house. He knocked on the door. The girl opened up the door, and she looked up at the handsome prince on his beautiful white horse, and he looked down at a girl who was certainly not beautiful. "Excuse me," said the prince. "Is there a beautiful girl who rides a mule who lives here?" "No." "Do you maybe have a beautiful friend?" "No." A beautiful cousin, perhaps, or a sister?" "No," she said, but remember, she was smart. "I do have a beautiful neighbor, and if you come back here tomorrow morning, she will be here with her mule to greet you." And the prince, satisfied, turned and rode off. Now, the girl thought. She knew she was the only one who rode the mule. There had to be something strange going on. She went up to her room. She picked up her hand mirror, and she looked at herself. There she was, the same plain face she'd seen every day of her life. She took that mirror. She ran downstairs, across the hall, out the door, across the yard, around the corner, into the barn, and she hopped up onto the mule, and she looked at herself again. She was beautiful. The mule was enchanted. So the next morning, she got up bright and early. She brushed her teeth. She brushed her hair. She washed her face. She put on her best dress. She went out to the barn. She hopped up on the mule and rode to the front of the house, just as the handsome prince on his beautiful white horse rode up to meet her, his face lit up. They rode through the village, talking back and forth, and as they rode, everyone just stared as they went by, because they'd never seen such a beautiful couple before. At the end of the day, he asked if he could come calling again. She agreed. The next morning, they rode out through the forests, and as they rode through the forest, they talked back and forth, and she could make him laugh like no one else ever had before. At the end of the day, he asked if he could come calling again, and the next morning, they rode out amongst the fields, and as they rode, they talked back and forth. He told her what it was like being a prince and how problematic that could be. She listened and came up with some really good ideas to solve his problems. By the end of the day, he could help himself no more. "Not only are you the most beautiful woman I have ever met, but you are smart, you are funny, you're kind, you're good at solving problems. I have fallen in love with you. Please, will you marry me?" Now, this girl, she had a thought or two in her head, so she said, "Yes, I will. But on one condition. I want you to remember me, to think of me always as I was in that first moment when we met. So I will spend time with you only when I am on my mule and you are on your horse." The prince was so besotted that he agreed. They went back to the house, they got her father's permission, and the next day off they rode. They rode through villages and towns until finally they came to the capital city. They rode through the city, they rode up the stairs of the church, they rode down to the altar, and there in the altar, in front of the altar, he on his horse, she on her mule, they spoke their vows to one another. They rode back out the aisle of the church, down the steps, across the square, up the steps of the palace. They rode into the great hall, and there they had their wedding feast. Everyone was delighted to see the prince so happy and so well matched in beauty and in wit. I know some of you are wondering about this. Towards the end of the meal, she leaned over and said, "Husband, this is all rather new to me, so if you don't mind, I would like to retire to our bedchamber first, and you can join me a few minutes later." Her husband readily agreed, so she made her farewells. She rode out of the great hall. She rode up the stairs in the palace. She rode down the long hallway until she came to the door of her bridal chamber. She looked around. No one was there. She hopped down off her mule, ducked into the room, closed the curtains, blew out the candles. The prince joined her soon. They had a lovely night. And in fact, they had a lovely marriage. Every morning she would rise early, go down and mount her mule, and the prince would come join her, he on his horse, and they would ride through the kingdom, and life was good. Well, one morning, not so long after they were married, but not so close that it seemed like marriage was still new, she found herself in the rose gardens. She loved roses more than almost anything else. She rode on her mule amongst the rose plants and admired their beauty and their fragrance, when she spied to one side a little bush of tea roses. Now, if you don't know, tea roses are very small and very fragrant, and they never grow to be very high, so she leaned down to try and pick some, but there atop her mule she couldn't reach, so she hopped down. She picked some of the roses, she held them to her, and she was so entranced by the aroma that she didn't hear her husband's horse riding up behind her. Now the prince rode into the garden, and there was his wife's mule. And there was a woman wearing his wife's dress, but she didn't look anything like his wife. "Who are you? What are you doing there? What's happened to my wife?" The woman's eyes snapped open. She saw the prince, and she thought quickly, and she said, your wife, she's over there," pointing behind the prince. The prince turned to look, and while his back was turned, she hopped right back up onto her mule. When he looked back, there was his beautiful wife, wearing the same dress that the other woman had been wearing, clutching those same flowers. "Wait a minute. Wait just a doggone minute. Was that you just a minute ago down there on the ground, only you looked, different?" She began to cry. "Yes," she said. "Yes, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to lie, but you fell in love with me when I was beautiful, and I was afraid you wouldn't love me when you found out I wasn't. I'm so sorry." She buried her face in her hands and sobbed. Now, she was so busy crying that she did not see the smile that began to spread across the prince's face. "Finally," he said, "I can get off this doggone horse." He hopped down off his horse, and you know, he was no longer a handsome prince anymore. At best, he was plain. If truth be told, he was really quite homely. She leapt down next to him, and they embraced, and they lived happily and honestly, if not beautifully, ever after.
Today's fairy tale sponsor is Billy Goat's Gruff Gardening Services. Don't let the grass on the other side of the ravine look better than yours. Hire Billy Goat's Gruff Gardening Services to trim the grass in your meadow, weed the vegetable patch, and get rid of the troll that picks his nose under your bird bath out of your garden once and for all. This episode is also brought to you by the Patreon supporter Eden Elizabeth. Eden has an uncanny ability to see fairies out of the corner of her left eye, has excellent taste in music, and is a generous supporter of the arts, which is pretty cool. A big thank you to her and all the other patrons. If you want to hear me make up facts about you, then maybe you should become a supporter too. It would be pretty cool. At least the tiny thing in my bed might have been a heffalump. It gave a tiny trumpet and dropped the rock on the bed. I grabbed a hat in one swift motion, covered the little thing. I'd done it. I'd caught a heffalump. Take that, Winnie the Pooh. But what? What was it really? Was it really a heffalump? And what were the rocks all about? I lifted the hat, and underneath I found another rock and nothing else. The rocks have stopped appearing on my pillow. I think I offended it. I offended a heffalump. The second story for this episode is a bit of a rarity. It's actually told by me, your intrepid host. I told this story at the Tejas Festival this March, and it was an honor and delight to be invited to share. This is one of my favorite stories. This is The Blue Bull. So stories, as we all know, travel. And stories have new methods of traveling these days. Because the story I'm about to tell you is a Middle Eastern story that was written in German that was told to me by a Swiss storyteller. So the story was written down by Frau Hohl, and my friend Isabel said, I heard this beautiful story, and she slowly told it to me because she had to translate it out of German into English. And when I heard it, I realized the story had been hunting me because I thought it was so beautiful. I said, can you please ask her if I can tell this story? And so word made its way back to her, and now I'm going to tell it to you. There once was a land that was covered in sand. And in the middle of this desert, there was a city with red walls and white mosques and a king. And this king, he was a good king. He was well educated. Each day, he had been trained in some new skill or art. He was an excellent fighter. The city was prosperous. But the king had one fault. He pitied those who had to live everyday lives. His life was full of new experiences and new events every day. Something magical and wonderful happened, and he pitied those who had to do the same thing day after day. And this king, as kings still do to this day, he would disguise himself and walk among his people. And so it was. On one of these days, in disguise, he walked through the market. He smelled the spices. He watched the vendors squabbling with the housewives about fruit and meat. He passed by a young woman making baskets, watched her pick up a reed and pass it through a pile of baskets beside her, and he shook his head. It's unfortunate. Every day she has to work with those sharp sticks.
He walked past the woman who was spinning with goat hair, picking up large tufts of wool and spinning it out into long threads. And he said, "That's unfortunate. Every day with smelly goat hair, she makes her living." And then the king passed by the potter, who was sitting in the mud up to his knees, hands working on a bowl, mud up his arms. And the king looked and said, "Oh, that must be the worst of all, in the mud and the dirt every day." And as the king passed by, the potter began to laugh. "What are you laughing about?" "Your Majesty, it is not unfortunate that I sit here, for with this mud and the water and the fire, I make magic." The king was intrigued. "Show me." The potter invited the king into his little shop just off the street. It was dark inside, but for one beam of light that came down to a table in the middle. And when the king's eyes adjusted to the darkness, he could see stacks of beautiful pottery, bowls and vases and large pots and plates. And they were beautiful, glazed in blues and greens and yellows. And the king looked at them. "These are lovely, but they are not magic. I eat off of gold plates every day. These are not magic." And the potter said, "Wait." The potter took a blue bowl and set it in the center of the table, in that shaft of sunlight, and filled it with cool, clear water. And then the potter said, "Look into the water." The king leaned over the water, expecting to see his own reflection, but no. In that water, he saw a sight that he did not expect. It was a city with tall white walls, trees lining the edge of it. There was a beach, a white sandy beach that came down to an ocean that was so blue he had never seen the like of it. The king leaned closer. He started to be able to hear sounds from the city, sounds of people moving, a language he didn't quite catch. He couldn't quite understand. Music drifting up. The king leaned closer. He could smell the ocean. He could smell the spices from the city. The king leaned closer. His head touched the water, and in that moment, water was around him. It was in his ears, in his nose, in his mouth. Water was round his body, but no one drowns without a fight. The king kicked and struggled until his head came above the surface. He gasped for air. And there in front of him was the white city, swimming in the ocean towards the shore, staggering up towards the beach. And on the beach, there was a young man. This young man came towards the king. "Are you her? Are you the girl that I have dreamed about night after night? I am no woman." But the hands were long and unfamiliar. The hair was long, and there were parts that were unfamiliar as well. And the poor young woman coming out of the water was struck dumb in shock. The young man didn't know what to do with her, so he put his cloak around her and took her home. And this young woman sat silently day after day. Now, the young man was the son of the goldsmith. And so they sat with this girl and tried to talk to her, but she sat for day after day not speaking, until finally his mother took charge. She took the young woman to the heart of the house, the kitchen, showed her how to make bread. And the young woman, it was as if she had never made bread before, because she was terrible at it, and it took a long time for her to learn how to knead the bread. And then when the bread was cooked in the oven and they had it for dinner, the young man leaned over to her and told her it was the best bread he had ever tasted. And the girl smiled. And so his mother taught her how to make the dishes that they were used to making, taught her how to come into market, and slowly the girl started to talk. She learned how to buy vegetables and haggle for meat and spices. She learned how to make the dishes, and every night the young man would try to talk to her. And she would talk about her life before the ocean. And she talked about it as if she was talking about a dream. She couldn't quite remember it, but the young man listened attentively.
And then his mother taught her how to spin wool. And the girl was quite terrible, to be honest. She did not know how to do it, and it took a long time before she got a straight thread. And finally, when she had enough thread, she learned to weave, and she made herself an apron, a festival apron. And when that was done, the young man asked her to the festival, and they went together, and they danced every dance together. And she smiled all the more when he whispered in her ear. And he asked her to marry him, and she said yes. And after their marriage, which was as grand as any wedding you've ever been to, after their marriage, her belly grew bigger, and in 9 months she gave birth to a boy who had a temperament like wind across the desert. And when that boy could walk, she gave birth to a baby girl with eyes as blue as the ocean that came up to that city. And when that little girl could walk, her husband became ill. The son of the goldsmith lay in bed, and though she sat beside him and she told him stories and she sang him songs, he died. And those of you who have lost someone knows how that hollows you out. And she was as hollow as she had ever felt. And when the funeral rites were over, her father-in-law called her to him, saying, "My dear, I don't know how they do it where you come from, but here in our city, when a husband dies and it is not in war, his wife must return to her people and the children stay with us. And we don't know where you came from. You came to us from the ocean, and so you must return to the ocean." And she was so cracked with the grief, she did not argue. She kissed her children. She walked down to the ocean. She walked into the water. It came up her ankles. It came up to her knees. It came to her waist. It came to her neck until the water was in her ears, in her mouth, in her nose. But no one drowns without a fight, kicking and struggling to the surface. The king stood up, water dripping down his face into the blue bowl. He looked out the door of the potter's shop and down the street. He could see the woman spinning wool pick up another handful and spin another long thread. He watched the woman making baskets pick up another stick and weave it in and out. Now, the story tells us that he was a good king after that. He did not pity anyone for their lives, their day after day, lovely lives. It also tells us that the king bought that bowl for an enormous amount of money. But whether or not he ever filled it with water, that I cannot tell you. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Story Story Podcast. Show the love. Find Laura Packer on the internet to tell her you heard her on the podcast and now want to hear her tell more stories. You can find me and the podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Story Story Podcast or Rachel Ann Harding. The idea for this week's fairy tale sponsor came from the beautiful brain of Maria V. Vatnin. The inspiration for the true fairy tale was inspired by a story seed from Laura Packer. You can find her lovely story and writing prompts by looking her up on social media. While you're there, check out the ads for the fairy tale sponsors and let me know the favorite story you have heard or the favorite stories of your childhood. If you would like to become a supporter of the podcast for as little as $4 a month, you can find links on storystorypodcast.com and hear me read your name and thank your beautiful face for the world to hear. This week, the story for the patrons is by Yvonne Healy, and it's a funny story about clever farm animals and the Healy Cross. If it isn't in the cards to support the podcast right now, no worries. Perhaps you'd be willing to go write a review on iTunes, which helps other story lovers find and enjoy the podcast. Head over to the website and join the mailing list for hidden goodies. And if you tune in, you will hear more stories next week. But until then, live happily ever after.
And Mary Kate opened up the door, and there on the doorstep, wrapped in his own blanket, was her baby.
And to this day, Anansi spins webs so that he can catch the flea, the fly, and the moth that got away.
If you go down to the lake on a clear day, when the water lies as calm as a sheet of glass, you can still see the rooftops of the castle glittering in the sunlight. And if you listen You can even hear the festive music from the royal court.
Today's fairy tale sponsor is Billy Groats Guff.